I am Daniel Lucas, and welcome to Music 101. Music 101 is all about music itself. And today, I have a special guest. He's the author of the book Moments in Time. No other than Mr. Tom Lack.
Good day, Daniel, and hello, listeners. Interesting time when we've had in the sessions, those who may have joined us talking about the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And now we're entering an area, you know, of the 80s. And for me, I'm very curious, Daniel, because this is your sweet spot. This is your love. So I wonder if I can turn this around a little bit and ask you a question. When you think of that music from the 80s, what's the first things that come to your mind?
Well, if it's 80s, it's all about pop and reminisce those music. Until now, they are echoing. And it's still patterns for these singers or songwriters as their, say, motivation to be to give and produce better music.
Yeah, that's interesting because the 80s are often commonly remembered for their a great increase in the use of digital recording associated with the primarily big use of synthesizers and we got this synthetic pop, if you will, coming out, and major electronic genres were developed: electropop, technopop, house, freestyle, and even Eurodance was big. And these all rose to prominence during the 90s and beyond. Certainly throughout the decade, R&B, hip-hop, urban genres, they started becoming a little bit commonplace. But, you know, rap was especially successful in the latter part of this decade. And with the advent of what we call the golden age of hip-hop.
Yes, truly, truly true. And until now, as you said, 80s is something that if you go back, there's a music that suit for you, either a pop or jazz or whatever. What kind of music are you in?
Yeah, no, it's interesting because the genres, I don't like to use the word collide, but they were sort of mixing up a little bit. And there was something for everybody, if that's a fair way of saying it. A good example on some of the, you know, getting to some specifics of some of the great people, the 1980s saw, often referred to as the reinvention of Michael Jackson, and the worldwide superstardom of Prince, Madonna, and of course, Whitney Houston, who were among the most successful musicians during this time. In fact, Madonna, believe it or not, was the best-selling female artist of the 80s.
Legendary pop icon Madonna.
Yeah, and if you remember when we closed off, folks may recall I was talking about groups or duos coming on the scene, and we talked about one of your groups you liked too was Hall and Oates. Well, Hall and Oates really came into their own in the 80s, and believe it or not, it was during that period that they passed the Everly Brothers, who were in the 1950s big time, as the number one charting duo of the rock era. That's how powerful Hall & Oates became.
Yes, indeed. And in the 80s, hip-hop also art and rap emergence, right?
Oh, absolutely. You don't know, there's no question about it. And yet, you know, as I always talk about stuff going full circle, there were nostalgic moments as well. In 1983, there was the infamous 25-year Motown special, where Michael Jackson on that show really established himself as the king of pop. I mean, who can forget the night when he introduced Billie Jean to the world, accompanied by his legendary moonwalk?
Definitely. And also the birth of music videos and MTV.
Oh, true. In fact, Hit Me With Your Best Shot, Pat Benatar put out, I think that was the first top music video when they started. And it was a great job. All of a sudden, we started to see these things, not just old clips of performances, but an art form, creating a selling piece for the songs. And I also can't forget, just in the early part of that decade, how impactful some groups could be who weren't around for a long time. From 1979 to 81, do you realize that Blondie had 4 number one records?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, The Tide Is High is still probably one of my favorite ones of all time. But they had 4 number one records. Incredible group. And yet, you know, and then Deborah Harry went on her own, did some, you know, movie work, starred in Hairspray, and really, you know, really found herself. But, you know, if you sat back, though, I think here's what's fascinating. Even though we talk about rap and it's coming on the hip hop and stuff was happening, I went and checked out one of my favorite sources, and it's called Chart Masters. Okay. And here are the top 10 selling artists of the 80s based on data that they accumulated. Number one was Michael Jackson. Number two was Madonna. As we mentioned, she was the top female singer. Now, here is a surprise. Going on his own after Genesis, Phil Collins was number 3.
Oh, I love Phil Collins.
Yeah. I knew you would. I knew you'd light up as soon as you hear that. At number 4, this was a surprise to me because I had forgotten about him, but I remember their two big albums. One was War, and the other was the Joshua Tree, and that was U2. And they were huge. They were huge. And then at number 5, another one of your favorites for sure, you know, I'll let you talk to this, was Queen with Freddie Mercury.
Oh, yes. Until echoing, until now.
Yeah, no, Queen was fantastic. And then in numbers, coming in at number 6 on their, according to their data summary, was Prince. I mean, Prince was huge in the 80s. And I remember the Purple Rain tour. In the mid-80s, 85, 86, I was down in the Seattle area, strangely enough, going to a basketball game. Seattle had the Supersonics back then. And the hotel we're staying on, the Purple Rain Tour, as it was called, had the whole 6th or 7th floor. I think it had them both.
Took
them right on over, you know, and even getting on the elevator, seeing these, you know, very large gentlemen who were taking care of things, security for Prince. But that always sticks in my mind. But Prince was a master, and on a lot of his records, I don't know if you realize this, but he almost played every instrument. I mean, he could play like 19, 20 instruments. He was an amazing, amazing talent, that man.
Definitely, he's amazing.
Yeah.
And 80s also, Mr. Tom, heavy metal and glam rock, right?
Yep.
The 80s were also significant for the evolution of heavy metal and emergence of glam rock, like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, or let's say Iron Maiden.
Yeah, you know, they were. I mean, certainly coming in number 7 as an example was, you know, the hard rock. It was AC/DC. They were huge. They were big.
Yes.
And then we still had the meat, what I call the meat and potatoes type of hard driving blue collar performer. And that was Bruce Springsteen. And when he had Born in the USA, the album, of course, the single really launched him as a true force in the area of music for sure. And then on another guy, as a theme song for many of the people, was Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer. Remember that one?
Oh, yes. Definitely. One of a kind of Bon Jovi. And Bed of Roses.
Yeah. And one of my, you know, rounding out this top 10 here category, and it gets to sort of the glam rock stuff, but I didn't realize how powerful an impact they had. But George Michael and Wham, remember when Wham came out? Do you realize that group sold 30 million records from 1982 to 1988.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a great learning piece for me. I certainly knew about Michael Jackson, Madonna, you know, Whitney. I mean, Whitney Houston's not even in the top 10, but she was a force to be reckoned with. And her you know, and then come early 90s, she redoes Dolly Parton stuff, and she just becomes a, you know, a super icon, yeah, in the marketplace. And then, you know, 90s, you know, pushed because of their what they saw in the 80s and what they really were influenced by, then people like Mariah Carey come on the scene. So the 80s really, not only did they look back to what had been before them, but they ended up being an inspiration for the next two decades.
Certainly amazing. People in the 80s. So do you think, Mr. Tom, 80s is something to look back, and those songwriters must produce like this kind of music?
Yeah. Yeah. My only challenge with that, I think the songwriting always prevails, and good songs, you know, as we said before, last forever. And I chuckle when I say that, because a little aside, but in 1958, a Christmas song came out by Brenda Lee called Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. And it's always been on the charts almost every year. Do you realize that this year it went to number one on Billboard? 65 years later, and it hit the number one spot.
Oh, wow.
So there's a test of time as to what great music is. My only challenge with the music of the 80s was the digital mastering was so incredible that when I had the opportunity maybe to see the group live, they couldn't live up to the recordings that I was, you know, listening to on the radio. Not in all cases, but also we learned some of the things that, you know, were going on. And, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, I mean, I saw Milli Vanilli live, and we all know, you know, their story. They're just, you know, front guys for a song that was really done by session musicians. And when I saw them, they couldn't do it. I mean, it was so well mastered that almost to the detriment of live performances. Again, just take that as opinion that I've had on some of that music.
Certainly. In the 1980s was also notable for music roles in social and political issues.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Now, when you say that, okay, in terms of, you know, music started getting its voice in terms of protest or talking in music, and this, you know, starting in the late 60s, we talked before with, you know, Buffalo Springfield and with For What It's Worth, and then, you know, got into the, you know, some of this stuff in the 90s, in the following decade, in the 70s. But in the 80s, when you ask that question, what pops into your mind? I'm very curious when you say about music and the political overtones. Well, where did that stick out for you? Was there anything prominent that really, you know, got your attention?
Oh, yes, Mr. Tom, the Live Aid concert in 1985.
There you go.
Organized by Bob Geldof.
Yeah.
And meets Ur to raise funds for famine relief in Ethiopia.
There you go. That's
incredible.
It was. And good for you for picking that up. And now, to me, there is what I call, it's going to be an unusual, a very positive protest. That was something that was put together for the right thing. It was the right thing to do, but also raising money was one thing. That's a short-term thing. Creating awareness so we can create some sustainability down the line, that is yet another. And I could see that that's, you know, was certainly their impetus. So good on you for picking that out.
Yes, incredible people. I hope people nowadays do that too, in supporting climate change.
Yeah,
right.
It can't hurt. Yeah, and that's not a, and you know what? And that's not such a stretch. I really believe you could do that. And also, we had artists working together too in the 80s. I think about Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney. You know, Ebony and Ivory, and, you know, songs like that. It was encouraging to see this cross of respect, if you will, and for new talent. And so that was very gratifying as well for me.
Definitely indeed. So, Mr. Tom, what do you think the pros and cons of the 80s music?
Oh boy, I think the pros of it was there was a stage where people felt confident in going out and creating their own identity and moving forward. No different than the guys did, back in the 50s. So I think there was there. The opportunity to use digital stuff to enhance their sound, I think, was great. The con for that to me was the overproduction of some of the stuff that I heard, and it didn't match up to live entertainment. So that was my challenge with it. But it was very, very progressive. I mean, I didn't think, be honest with you, the first rap song actually hit Billboard in 1983, believe it or not. And then it really got big towards the end and really, got into that golden age. And I thought that that was just a fad. And today it is part of our culture, and it has become a great vehicle for protest. And the writing and the depth of some of those lyrics are absolutely astounding. So I take my hat off to an area of music that I certainly didn't get at the forefront, but I've learned to appreciate at the back end.
Definitely. So, Mr. Tom, 80s, what else you can say about the 80s?
Well, for me, it was certainly an interesting period of change. I found that, and it was a change in my life too, because I actually moved to Vancouver from Toronto in that period of time. And I found that what I started to see was reflection. Even though people were moving forward, but I was still looking at reflection. And I make this case because I think of, and this time of the season, strangely enough, in 1984, there was a gentleman on the air here in Vancouver. His name was Dave McCormick. And he did country shows, he did pop shows, and that. He was even known as the Kitsilano Cowboy, believe it or not, for a period of time. But he did a show, a discumentary on Christmas songs and their evolution from White Christmas when it first came out in the movie Holiday Inn in 42, right up through the 50s and the 60s periods, and how the rock and roll groups glommed on to these traditional Christmas carols. In the 80s, there were a number of groups that did the same thing, took a look at these great standard Christmas songs and did their own variations of them. So a lot of the 80s tunes sometimes we hear at Christmas now, I mean, they're old songs, but again, they passed the test of time. I mean, Bruce Springsteen doing Santa Claus is Coming to Town is something else. It's very, very, very cool, and all these songs get out. I mean, Mariah Carey had a big Christmas album. Of course, she produced a phenomenal Christmas song that, she really got into the full swing of that period of time. So I like that about the 80s, but it was interesting. It was a reflective period as well. Mr. McCormick, in addition to doing that Christmas documentary, which is wonderful, I listen to it every year, by the way, at Christmas, he did one going back to the roots and tying it in to where the groups are in the 80s on rockabilly. Strangely enough, that offset, that raw form of rock and roll from the mid 50s to up to about, oh, about 59, 60. It was fantastic. But I could see, you could see a bit of that connection. And even when you got into sort of like punk rock type stuff, you could see that raw connection. So music of the 80s has become a great outgrowth. It's almost like the child of rock and roll moving forward. And it was a great opportunity for groups. The other thing that helped it so much is our communication worldwide was getting better. So, you know, you and I were exposed to the Phil Collinses of this world, the other great British performers. So I like that about the 80s too, because it was an era of technology really came to the forefront.
Definitely, people, the legacy music is lasting and persuasive. It was a decade that expanded the boundaries of music, influencing subsequent generations of artists and shaping popular culture. The sounds, styles, and attitude of the 80s continue to resonate in today's music and fashion, demonstrating decades of enduring impact.
Yep, you nailed it.
So, Mr. Tom, can you please invite our listeners to support your Moments in Time?
I'd love to. Thank you for the opportunity, Daniel. Yes, folks, as Daniel mentioned, my book is called Moments in Time, and it's the story about artists and songs of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And it's designed in such a fashion that it's interactive, given that each story I tell is only two pages with a little bit of a mystery in it. You try to guess, oh, what artist is he talking about? What song is he talking about? And I tell that story, and it ends on the second page, and you get the rest of the story. Then at the bottom, I've made it interactive in that I have a QR code. So you put your smartphone camera over that, click to that, and it will take you to the song. This book, the timing right now, it's become a Christmas stocking stuffer, if you will. And it's available on Amazon worldwide. And for those in the lower mainland and want to get a hold of me, it has its own website as well. And that's MITstories.com, the MIT standing for Moments in Time. So that's MITstories, all one word, .com. And if people like to write to me or get in contact with me with regards to that music, you can get me at Tom Locke, that's all one word, TOMLOCKE, at MITstories.com.
Yes, people, let's support Mr. Tom Locke, because if you support him, more and more books to come. And I'm inviting you to listen to my other podcast, Food 101, our fourth season with Chef Alessandro, one of the best executive chefs in one of the five-star restaurants in downtown Toronto. So please do listen to our latest episode. We're giving you a Christmas recipes for the season to consider to be prepared on your table. So please do listen. Food 101 plus one more. Our books are out, not only one, but 12 or 13 volumes, people. Food 101 volume 1, basics until 12 or 13 is only the books that you need. How to create a delicious food, available on Amazon and leading online bookstores worldwide. So, Mr. Tom, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Season's greetings to you, Daniel, and to your listeners. And all the best. And let's go for a happy, healthy, and prosperous new year.
Yes, indeed, people. Bye-bye. Moriko, people. See you soon.